Donald Trump scored big Tuesday night in Georgia. He got the bulk of the 76 Republican delegates that were up for grabs. More remarkable, though, is who voted for him. He won across all demographic lines, from the rich to the poor to the educated and the uneducated. Here to explain Trump's appeal is Greg Bluestein. He's a political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Greg, it's always good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Trump's latest wins have deepened a rift that already existed in the Republican Party. A social media movement with the hashtag #NeverTrump represents Republican voters who vow to never vote for him. Will Cramer is a conservative who cannot see himself casting a ballot for the Donald, and he's a familiar show voice on the show in the break room. He also writes for GeorgiaPoll.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Celeste.
Will, what exactly is behind Never Trump?
Never Trump is the brainchild of conservatives who can't see themselves voting for Trump, much like you said. It's an unholy coalition of people from Eric Erickson to Mitt Romney that have come together to say Trump is not a conservative. He's not going to be the voice of our party, and we're just never going to vote for him. And I mean, you're seeing people just like Trump appeal to people all across every spectrum in Georgia. You're seeing people of every flavor of Republican saying we will never vote for Trump.
Greg, who is voting for Trump? Because it hasn't been that long since political analysts were not taking his campaign seriously. Even people in the GOP were saying, don't worry, he's not going to get the nomination. So who are these voters?
I think you hit the nail on the head. His appeal cuts across all demographic lines and all boundaries. He won nearly 40% in Georgia. He won the people who made over 50 grand a year, the people who made under 50 grand a year. He won the college graduates. He won the people with high school educations. He won the people lived in North Georgia, South Georgia, all across, males, females. He won minorities. He won every category to speak of in Georgia, except for maybe a few postdoctoral people with postgraduate degrees, Rubio. Metro Atlanta, Rubio won four of the 159 counties. Trump won the rest.
Is there a common denominator between all these different people?
Exit polls show the overwhelming majority have one thing in common: disgust with government, a bubbling anger with the way Washington establishment is working.
Will, to what extent are people in the Republican Party trying to examine how the party got here?
It's been a buildup. It's not something that just happened overnight. And I will put the blame where the blame deserves to be, and it's with the establishment. It's with the current elected Republicans. They have not been listening to the everyday voter. But I will also say there's a certain trend in Trump voters that I don't think the establishment Republicans could ever fight against, and it's the authoritarian mindset that some of these voters have. They're afraid, they're fearful, and they want results. And you have someone up there like Trump saying, I'm going to build a wall with Mexico, make Mexico pay for it. Someone questions it, and he goes, now it's going to be 10 feet taller. That's the type of torque these people are appealing to, or that he's appealing to these people with. And they're just flocking to it like a moth to a light. It's something that I don't think is a necessarily a conservative viewpoint. It's just a weird phenomenon that I think that we're seeing it's rearing its ugly head now.
Was there a way to I've seen that a number of people who were part of the Tea Party are now big Trump supporters.
Right.
Was there a way that the GOP could have handled the rise of the Tea Party better?
It could have. In 2010, everyone was a Tea Party member. Every Republican was Tea Party. We all loved the Tea Party. I went to Tea Party meetings. But eventually, the Tea Party started demanding certain things that the Republican establishment either said we can't do or that's just not viable to do. And then that just created this rift between the two organizations. And now you're seeing the Tea Party latching onto anything that it can get its hands onto that will fulfill whatever it sees as effective governance. And the Tea Party, in my opinion, has never necessarily been this shining example of proper governance. They scream no to a lot of things. They very rarely have solutions. And then you have a Donald Trump come by that's screaming what they've been saying for the past 6 years, and he doesn't really have any solutions. His policy stances don't really exist. They're mere things like, what are you going to do about healthcare? Erase the lines, whatever that really means. And that's the type of rhetoric that the Tea Party is attracted to.
Greg, what about evangelicals? We've heard a lot about the evangelical movement following Trump. Any idea why that is?
You know, that's one of the most fascinating things about this entire election is that Ted Cruz staked his entire candidacy on the evangelical movement, on doing well in the SEC primary states like Georgia, where 70% of Georgia Republicans identified themselves as either evangelical or born-again Christians. Yet the brunt of those, the bulk of those voters went to Donald Trump. And that's why Ted Cruz couldn't win here, is because if you can't get the evangelical voters to come to your camp and you get those siphoned away by both Trump and Marco Rubio, you lose. And when I asked some conservative pundits about that, they basically said evangelical voters are just like everyone else. They vote, they're people of faith, but they don't vote on that maybe as the number one factor. It's important to them, but it's not the driving force to bring them to the polls, and I think that's what happened. They saw someone like Trump as being a voice for them, but also a voice against the Washington establishment.
We just got this tweet that I want to read to you, Will. Thunder Shrike, I think is what it says, at Thunder Shrike says, hashtag Never Trump commits no true Scotsman fallacy, which refers to, you know, a claim no Scotsman would do such a thing, and so that person's not a true Scotsman. What do you say to a criticism like that?
That I'm, in essence, not a true Republican.
No, that people claiming Donald Trump isn't a real conservative.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really – if you look at Donald Trump's past and what he has said, even just – you know, a few months ago, to compare what he's saying now, in the debate last night, he reversed a certain position and he said, I now want high-skilled immigrants to come into our country. His entire campaign has been hinged on, we don't want any immigrants. It's almost this nativist talking points that he's been using. And now all of a sudden he goes, well, if you're a highly skilled immigrant, we want you here. Trump has never necessarily been a conservative. If you look at his where he's been sending his money, actions speak louder than words. And his money's been sent to Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Democratic organizations, Democratic candidates. Sure, he's donated to Republicans, and there's a certain amount of that I can understand by saying he's a businessman. He has to get along with everybody. He lives in New York. I can understand some parts of it. But then you look at all the people he's donated to, and I don't really think he's a conservative, and I don't think that he's ever espoused real conservative talking points until it was politically expedient for him.
Greg, let me read also a couple more tweets. T-Barf tweets, I didn't vote for Trump in the primary. Hope he is not the nominee, but rest assured I will vote for him versus Clinton or Sanders. Greg, one of the things that has also sort of surprised a lot of pundits is the fact that even when Donald Trump is caught in a blatant lie, it doesn't shake the voters at all. Why?
Nothing has shaken the voters, which is the other just phenomenon here. The night before the New Hampshire primary, I was in Manchester and I heard him call Ted Cruz an expletive. And, you know, within a few hours, CNN and all these other pundits, how will that affect the vote? It didn't at all. He won huge in New Hampshire. Nothing he said so far, done so far. The debate right before South Carolina when he blamed George W. Bush for 9/11.
Call him a liar.
Call them a liar. Call Jeb Bush a liar. And, you know, X, Y, and Z didn't have any impact whatsoever, or maybe only a marginal impact on the South Carolina primary. And, of course, didn't really trickle down here. These are things just 4 years ago, you had the oops moment, knockout Rick Perry, one debate moment, you know, like that, turned around the race for someone who was once considered the front runner. Now, you know,
doesn't matter.
Nothing.
There is
like
no
that.
Oops moment.
There is no oops moment.
Well, there are oops moments, but they don't end up being bad.
Yeah.
So, Will, since Greg mentioned Rick Perry, some people in the GOP are saying maybe they'll offer a third party candidate, and Rick Perry's name has been thrown into that. Is there a possibility that the Never Trump people could support a third party person?
It depends on the third party person. Going back to what I said earlier about the Never Trump movement, it's this weird coalition of people that, you know, Eric Erickson and I like the guy.
Eric Erickson of Red State. Yeah.
Yes, of Red State. Yes. He and I, we get along. I like him, but we don't necessarily see eye to eye on a lot of issues. Whenever you have both me and Eric Erickson in the same group of people screaming Never Trump, and we go, okay, we're going to put up a candidate, we have to figure out which candidate's going to be that both Eric Erickson and I can agree on. And that's going to be a little bit difficult. The GOP, by nature, is a very fractured party. We like to disagree. We like to scream and yell at each other, not the Democrats. And so if we're talking about a third-party candidate with Rick Perry, I'm not sure Rick Perry really fits the mold. I'm thinking more of a Scott Walker. I think
Scott Walker of Minnesota. Wisconsin.
Right. Governor of Wisconsin. Or maybe a Mitt Romney, who was our 2012 presidential candidate. I think people could rally behind the two of them. I think Rick Perry, maybe not. But I definitely think a lot of people would be able to get behind a third-party candidate that are in this Never Trump movement. In fact, there was a statistic that said 1 in 5 Republicans are ready to bolt from the party if Trump's our nominee. So there's already a base of people that would be willing to jump ship.
So we have a couple of conservatives have weighed in on whether a third party could be the way to go. Jessica Szilagyi, who many of our listeners know, says, I wouldn't support Perry, but would enjoy the GOP jumping through the third party hoops they supported. Chet Martin tweets, if it's a Hillary Trump race, I'll likely vote Gary Johnson, a libertarian. Another choice would be good. So before we go, I got to ask you, Will, if it's down to just Hillary and Trump, what do you do?
Haven't made up my mind yet. I'm not sure I could vote for Hillary Clinton, but I know I could not vote for Donald Trump. I would either, you know, vote just not vote for the presidential election and vote for Republicans down the ticket for, you know, Congress.
You'd leave president blank.
Yes, I might just not vote for president, but I haven't really made up my mind as to what I would do then. I think that I'll cross that bridge once we have our nominee.
Greg, we have 30 seconds. Do we have any idea how big the Never Trump movement is and whether it would affect the turnout in November?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of voters like Will who are undervote, which is they ignore the presidential ballot and they vote straight party ticket down the line. And it's going to be a major factor if Trump is the nominee.
Greg Bluestein is a political reporter with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Will Kramer writes for GeorgiaPoll.com. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.